The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Welcome, everyone, to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you for being with me on this chilly but yet sunny Thursday in February. Next week, I will be out of pocket. We're going to a sunny place for just a few days, leaving Wednesday, coming back Sunday. So with that said, yes, you'll have a stand-in host next week, and I have put the notice out to the guys in the office. So I think you may hear the entire band next week, as Josh Norris will be on to talk some about Medicare and things you should know about that, which applies to a lot of people as they approach that 65th birthday. It's a little bit uneasing, right, when you have to start making these decisions about Medicare and supplements, Advantage plans, drug plans, and all of that. So I think Josh is going to spend 5 or 10 minutes, and of course Wayne and Ryan at the office, who cover most of the public employees around town. I wouldn't be surprised if you hear a little bit from them. Of course, the old standby, Dr. Hughes himself, will be the main anchor, and you may even hear from Hot Rod, like you'll hear from him here in just a few minutes as we've wrapped up January solidly into February and a lot going on to talk about. So we're looking forward to having that conversation with Rod in just a few minutes. Let's do a little news of the week brought to you by the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my friend Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And Unrivaled Electric, they are your full-service electrical contractor. They'll get you set up with a generator, solar arrays, and they would be working today. They're veteran-owned, and they want to be your electrician like they are mine, 812-361-3604. Of course, or find them on Facebook. And finally, Kenny Bland Auctions. They are your full-service auction service. They are planning. They will help you plan the pre-planning sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online. They always have auctions going on at KennyBlandAuctions.com. I have a few things I'm going to have Dirk sell. He doesn't know about that, but I will see him this weekend, and we're going to get that hammered out. All right, since 1950, and this is where I talk about the bucket strategy and having plenty of time horizon with your equities, not worrying about, you know, pulling money out when the markets are down, and that's kind of the strategy we've ran with for many, many years, and, you know, and it works so well, why stop doing it, right? Well, over the last 63 10-year periods, that goes from 1950 all the way through the end of 2021, there has been a positive return 61 out of 63 rolling 10-year periods. So that's pretty impressive. That's why I tell folks, you know, 10 years is minimal for me to, in that later bucket, that later money. I like 10 or 15 because if you give us 12 or 13, then that number essentially goes to zero negative periods. 65% of the stocks in the S&P 500 were down in January of 2022, including 35 stocks that lost more than 15%. Of course, we've had a pretty good knock in the head as we start this year. But, you know, I talked about this last week, and I'll talk to you about it again, that we're not used to this, right? In the last 10 years, that's 40 quarters, right? If you go back, 40 quarters. We've only had two back-to-back negative quarters in the last 10 years, and that came in 2015. In spite of inflation that was up 7% in 2021, the long-term inflation expectations of the bond market, which is a fantastic indicator of long-term inflation, is predicting just 2.43% over the next 10 years. So take a look at the 10-year Treasury and add about, 0.75 to 1%, and that gives you what they believe, the bond market believes, will be the inflation going forward. Of course, the numbers are coming out today on Thursday, and I came in early to record because I have a program tonight that I did one similar at Ivy Tech on Tuesday night We had about 50 attendees. It was fantastic, and it was all about 2025, the final drive, what you need to know to win, right? It was all around that topic. They all received a copy of the book. And now I'm doing a bunch of follow-up with all the attendees. So, and let's see, tonight, Thursday, I have another program. This one is not at Ivy Tech. It's actually at our Legacy Learning Center down on South College. So looking forward to that. But we will talk to Rod about these inflation numbers when he comes on during the next segment. The average, here's something else I've talked a lot about. The average interest rate paid by the U.S. government on its interest-bearing debt was 1.56% as of 12/31/21. It was 2.5% back in 19 and 4.5% back in 2004. That's how you're able to take $15 trillion of debt, paying 3, and now you're at $30 trillion in debt, paying 1.5, and have the exact same debt service payment we had 10 years ago. Now, when's this going to catch up with us? When interest rates go up. When interest rates go up, and they already have started, the 10 years crept up. Most are predicting it settling in around 2 to 2.25 at some point. The cost of borrowing, the cost of poker just went up, and that will absolutely crush our balance sheet. It's already crushed. 90%, 90 cents of every dollar that comes in is spent on four things: Medicare, right? Social Security, Medicaid, and interest on the debt. Well, if you double our interest payments, I mean, it just crushes things. Well, what has to happen at that point? Cut benefits? No. Raise taxes? Yes. That's the only, or combination of both, right? So I am trying to prepare people, and that's why the podcast has been out. We have 4 episodes in the bank. You can listen to all 4 by heading over to Your Money with David Hayes podcast, and you can see it just fed right into the Your Money shows as we do them each and every week. Going to be recording number 5 today or tomorrow to go out on Monday. And then I'm going to put number 6 in the can before I head out of town. And we're going to keep them coming. Now, eventually I might stop, either out of boredom, or either I don't enjoy it anymore, or I'm out of things to say. So then it would just be like a episode, like a season, like season 1. And you could go back and watch the opener all the way through the end. I am completely caught up on my Yellowstone episodes, but that is something that I talk about in the podcast, that I want it to be so exciting. And so you look so forward to the next episode that it's like me waiting for the next Yellowstone to come out. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get Rod on the phone. Like I said, kind of a rocky January. February's been a little unnerving at times as well. Everyone's on pins and needles to see what the Fed does or what they say. Inflation, that's the talk of the town. We'll see what Rod has to say about where we are on things today and where we see things going forward. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Yeah, we had a little bit of a rocky start to January, and people always said in my career, as January goes, so goes the year. We're solidly into February now, Valentine's Day just around the corner. We have Rod Holloway that I'm sure will get his Valentine, Kelly, something very, very nice for next week. Rod, please don't give her a bathroom remodel for Valentine's Day. How's that sound for a tip?
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Those are pretty much done anyway, although I am working on a repair in the shower. She may be so happy for that, she would accept that as a Valentine gift if I got it done. But I know better than to give gifts of house projects around the home.
Yeah, no toasters, no coffee makers, no scales to weigh yourself on. Those are no-nos. So I'll be making my way over to Goldcaster's. I ordered something at Christmas time. This gives people an idea. I ordered her a gift at Christmas time. She had a magazine. And I forget the name of John Harding or something. So I take it over to Christian at the over at Goldcasters. I'm like, hey, can you get this? And he goes, yeah, we carry that. So then he called me and said, hey, dude, we can't get this thing. It's not going to be here until maybe February or March. Hopefully you'll have it before Valentine's Day. And he called me yesterday and said, hey, that thing came in. I'm like, well, that's the good news. The bad news is I'm going to be $1,200 lighter for Valentine's Day. So anyway, maybe we'll be eating at Burger King or White Castle and enjoying a nice gift rather than a nice Malibu dinner. So Rod, here we are. We haven't been here for a while. I was talking in the pregame that in the last 10 years, last 40 quarters, we've only had 2 back-to-back negative quarters in the last 10 years. It's hard to believe. That was in 2015. So people have become very used to things not going down. And this month, they got their 401k statements, they had their investment statements, and they're down. as we've gone through this recalibration of sorts in the market. And the Fed is, of course, on the move. I didn't talk to you before I came in if inflation numbers were released or if the Fed's been saying anything. But, yeah, there's just a lot on our plate right now to keep our eyes on, right?
Yeah, there most certainly is. So to the point that you were making as we first started this segment, so goes the market in January, so goes the year. That is a saying. It's not a very accurate saying, though. So it is one that has not necessarily played out very well as far as from an odds perspective. So don't panic because we had a negative January and assume that automatically means that. But we've talked a lot about that over the years that, yes, there are these calendar issues out there that people talk about, whether it be so go January, so go the year, sell in May and go away. But it is not an appropriate way to manage your portfolio. As far as where we're at in the year, yeah, we got off to a slow start, but that's also, I think, partially because we had such a strong year last year in which you're fighting a pandemic, you're fighting reopening your economy, and you get a market that gives you 28% on the S&P 500. That's an incredible year given the circumstances we had in front of us. So to do a little profit taking in January isn't a horrible thing. February got off to a good start. Now we're seeing a little bit of weakness today, and I think that's due to CPI. I think the market was hoping that maybe CPI came in a tad light. It wasn't expected to be a low number, but I think they were hoping that maybe it came in a little bit below estimate. It came in just a tick above estimate. Not a huge shocker. Like I said, I think more than anything, I think the market was maybe hoping that if it had a slightly lighter inflation print this month, that maybe it would slow the rate of increases down. But with the new number that we got today in inflation, 7.5% as an annual rate, that jumped the probability of a March 50 basis point rate hike up to 55%.
Wow.
So I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago I introduced the glass that there was now a 5% likelihood of a 50 basis point increase in March. 95%, you stick with the old trusty 25 bips. And then next thing you know, it crept up to 35. And now with this new release, it's at 55. I think that's the market's greatest fear. Not that the Fed is going to be raising interest rates. Let's keep in mind, the reason the Fed's raising interest rates is because it feels as though it no longer needs to help prop the economy up. The economy can do it on its own. And I believe the Fed is correct in that regard. What the market is fearful of is the pace of those increases. How fast do we increase them? And I think that's where the market is a little bit jittery right now, is that with these high inflation numbers and the fact that the Fed let inflation run hot for a while because they didn't want to cut it off too soon. Remember, they changed their mandate to not get to 2%, but to average 2% in inflation, which means we've been under that so long, means you're going to have to ride over that for a while to actually average 2. So the fear is, do they have to get overly aggressive to try and cut off in inflation and then make a mistake in being too aggressive and actually cutting off growth versus just minimizing the inflation?
Yeah, and, you know, they've been a Fed of ranges as well, you know, so I could see them coming out and saying 25 to 50, kind of giving them a range. So they have some area to play in. But to your point, I mean, the probability of it going from a quarter to 50 basis points jumped a lot with this number. And you and I have talked on and off air that, hey, if the number came in at or below, the market would probably act reasonably well. If it came in a little hotter than that, then it would probably have a sell-off. So basically, this is a very predictable reaction. And interest rates are expected to rise. Fundamentals mean more than a good narrative right now for a company. Some companies and sectors are getting squeezed as a show-me market grows more skeptical, and the addressability of some of these issues and disruptions are certainly right there. And cash is speaking much louder than negative earnings as well. We've noticed that. This go around, so it's just a different time.
Yeah, most certainly. Well, and I think the thing we also have to keep in mind as we move forward with this, some of this inflation can't be contained by the Fed, no matter what they do with rates.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is, energy is a good area. Energy is an area that the rest of the world, I shouldn't even say the rest, the whole world, U.S. included, has put a target on energy companies as this is a bad place to invest your capital. So they're not getting a lot of capital injection, which also means they're not injecting a whole lot of their capital in searching for new opportunities. They are still doing that, but minimal, which means we're not going to, the supply is not going to grow, but the demand is also not going to fall off the table because we're not flipping over to 100% electric vehicle usage next year. So the Fed has very little control over that inflation. And then the inflation that has been created by a lack of employees in the system that's causing part of this, this logistics logjam, once again, regardless of what the Fed does with rates, if people aren't willing to come back to work at the ports, driving trucks, you know, in the warehouses, all of those things where we move these products through the system, then we're still going to have a supply-demand imbalance within the system, which is what creates inflation. You know, the whole idea is that you reduce the demand side. The Fed can control that, but it doesn't automatically mean that the prices go down with it, because if the prices are still being pushed up by things that the Fed is not in control of, such as the labor market right now, then they can't completely control inflation like they're hoping to be able to do.
You know, it was funny. I was with a contractor today just for a few minutes, and he said, oh, I need to order a dump truck to go take some dirt around. And he had him on speakerphone, and he said, hey, do you have a truck? And he said, well, I've got a truck. I just don't have any drivers to come do it. And he said, it would probably be a week before I can get that dirt moved. And he said, well, what if I pay you $500 more? And he said, you can't pay me $1,000 more. They're still not going to show up to drive my trucks.
Yeah. I still don't have a guy who's willing to do it for
you. You can pay me $500 or give me an extra. But that's not going to help those guys that aren't in here driving the trucks. As we look forward to the rest of the year, Rob, what do you think the themes are? And obviously people out there, you know, that are out on an island, they have the 401ks or their investments they don't feel like are being actively taken care of. I mean, as far as the remainder of this year or maybe even just into the summertime, any clarity at all or give people some expectations of what to expect so they don't get sort of freaked out if something happens?
Sure. Well, I most certainly think that we're going to have volatility in this year, and more so than what we have seen in the last year or two, because you're going to have this constant fight of, hey, the market is doing okay, companies are doing okay, consumers doing okay, but yet we still have some known headwinds out there that we're not 100% certain how hard they're blowing, and that's predominantly inflation and rising interest rates. Those are the two areas. Thankfully, I think one of the things that obviously has been a bit of a hindrance in the economy has been COVID and the new Omicron. Now it appears as though that things are rolling over across the board in all areas of the country. Hopefully there's not another variant that pops its head up like we had after Delta and Omicron came in. So hopefully we begin to move into the endemic phase and learn to live with this, and it's no longer causing issues within the economy. Once that's the case, then it really is focus on what is the economic data that is important to the Fed, and how is the Fed going to react to that? And more importantly, like I said earlier, it's not just what is the Fed going to do, because we know what they're going to do. It's how fast are they going to do it? So as we talked about with the 50 basis point increase, at one point there were only two rate increases priced into 2022. That is now up to five rate increases priced into 2022.
Well, it's priced in, though. That's the good news, right? We think it's priced in to where we are today.
It is.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So the acceleration that is out there is part of what's causing this weakness. And if the market believes it's going to accelerate even more than it already is exhibiting or is already priced in, that's going to cause a little more volatility and potential a sell-off at that time. But fundamentally, things still look pretty good for the majority of companies. I think the beat is running at about 76% of the companies who have reported have beaten on their earnings. So that is good. What you are seeing, though, is any company who misses or any company who meets but talks down the future, they're getting hammered pretty good in the market.
Yeah, they're getting their teeth bashed in if they miss it, and we've seen that a lot in big tech for sure. Rod Holloway, of course, regular contributor to the show and the equity portfolio manager down at the shop, CFCI. Rod, thanks as always, and we'll listen to you on Big Show Friday as a Chuck Crabless Big Show Friday. We'll carry on, and you'll be part of that. So thanks again, Rod. Great job as always.
Thanks, Dave. Have a great show.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears here. You know, I've been talking about getting people's estates in order. Well, what does that really mean? You know, I advertise for Lance Like and whatnot, so we're going to get into it just a little bit. Like, what is it? What documents do you need? What do they do? What things do you think things do that really don't happen? And maybe some more. We'll be back at Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. I'm drinking water like it's going out of style today for some reason, and my throat is fine, but every once in a while my voice does not want to react appropriately. All right, so one of the segments in our Retirement Planning Today course that we teach at Ivy Tech is totally on estate planning. And I've noticed over the last year or two, I've somewhat neglected really digging into this topic. Now, if you've listened to me for 20 years, we used to cover it usually twice a year. We'd have Tom Bunger come in. We'd have Lance Light come in. We would talk about all kinds of things. Well, I thought, you know what? We need to talk a little bit about this because here we are in February. Maybe it was a New Year's resolution that this is the year that we're going to get our house in order, right? And before time gets away too much, we wanted to walk you through some stuff. So first of all, everyone's like, do you have a will? Do you have a will? Well, you know, most of people's assets never make it through the will. And why is that? Because they have beneficiaries, and beneficiaries are direct transfer. So if you're sitting here with a big 401k, an IRA, life insurance, and whatever, anything that has a beneficiary attached goes directly to the person you've put in there. So even if your will says, when I die, I want everything to go to XYZ, it doesn't matter because your beneficiary form trumps it all. In fact, it trumps it all so often that it's been even challenged in the Supreme Court whenever a person did not put their spouse on as a beneficiary on a non, and it's complicated, but I'll give you the story, and don't argue with me because I know that nowadays it's a little bit different, but back then when this is 1994, it takes you back to my beginning of my career, he didn't put his wife on as a beneficiary because he had started as a teacher before they got married. Well, his mom and his sister were listed as beneficiaries. Well, his mom passed away. Then when he dies, the money went to his sister. And even though he was married and everything else pointed directly to his wife, it all went to his sister. That went all the way to the New York State Supreme Court, and they ruled, yep, it goes to the sister. So it's really important to have proper beneficiaries laid out. Now, a lot of people will say, well, then what goes through a trust? If I own something in my name individually, so if I own something that says just David, like a car or a piece of real estate that's just in my name, then that would be dictated by the will. But even if I died, really nothing goes through my will because it all is jointly owned with my wife, Misty. Bank accounts, right? Now, she probably has bank accounts with only her name on them, but that's another story. But it's not uncommon. As a financial advisor, I've seen everything, and then I turn around and my wife's rat-holing money, but that's fine. Whatever she wants to do is fine with me. But only things that are in my name would go through the will. So most things never make it through the will. The other thing you can do, and remember back in the old days where you would sign the title of the car and stick it in your top drawer, and then if something would happen to you, they would run to the BMV before anyone knew that you really were dead, and they would sign the car over to themselves. That used to happen. Well, nowadays, you can put what's called a transfer on death designation onto practically anything, which means that when I die, it transfers on death to this person. Well, that's a direct transfer. That does not go through my will. You can do it on cars. You can do it on real estate. You can do it on almost anything that has a title or a deed. You can do it on investment accounts that are non-IRA. Or if you have bank accounts, you can put the pay on death designation. All of that happens without ever going through the will. Now, people will say, what about a trust? I need a trust so my assets are protected. Well, majority of people that own trusts are misinformed. They believe that the trust they own is an asset protection trust. It is not. It's a probate avoidance trust. That's all it is. You put all this stuff into a trust and your house and bank accounts and cars and whatever. And when you die, it just gives the direction to those assets. Like, I want it to go here. I want it to be held in trust so that the person doesn't blow it all. That's the purpose of a trust. It doesn't protect your assets from Medicaid or from long-term care stays. Those are called irrevocable trusts. And most people don't have an irrevocable trust. They have a living trust or a revocable trust. The other problem with trusts are most people don't fund them properly. Good attorneys will sit down and say, okay, now we're going to move your assets in the trust, and they take control of that. But some will say, hey, here's your trust. Knock yourself out. Well, then you must take the trust and fund it and get all of these things transferred into the trust. What about a power of attorney? Very important. This is a living document that says, hey, if I can't or don't want to, I need her to sign for me. And it's super important that it has specific language in there regarding retirement accounts, not just blanket retirement, but specific regulations on 401ks and IRAs, because the trust, the powers of attorney that we have run into, many of them do not have that provision. And when it's needed, you don't want to have to mess with it. You just want it to work. So if you haven't had a power of attorney updated in the last just probably 5 years or less, maybe you need to check that and make sure with your attorney that it has the specific language as it addressed, not just language, but the code. Actually, it has the code in there as well. And we like to say, okay, I want your beneficiary. I want your power of attorney, even though we don't need it. I want to submit it to my custodian to say, will you accept this? Get them to accept it, get it in writing, and now you're good. Because most people do it the opposite way. They wait until they need it, then they submit it, then they say, sorry, it's not good enough. A living will. A living will is one of those things that say, hey, if I'm being kept alive by artificial, you know, nutrition and hydration, and the doctors say that I'm not going to make it, either keep me plugged in because I'm going to fight through this, unplug me, or make my healthcare rep decide. Now, the healthcare representative is that person that makes healthcare decisions for you and can if you can't do it yourself. Well, a lot of times you run into a situation where, hey, I need someone to say it's okay to do this procedure. Well, that's what your healthcare rep is for. Now, it is important, and this is the thing I wanted to get across now that I have a 21-year-old son. He is an adult. He's not financially independent. In fact, he doesn't even do what we tell him to do, but he is an adult, and if something happens to him, we need to be his healthcare representative. So make sure that you have a healthcare representative document on file that says, yes, you can make decisions for your adult young children. The same thing with a power of attorney. I want to be able to make financial decisions for him. I want to be able to sign things for him if he can't. He was in a car accident not long ago. Thankfully, he wasn't hurt. The car sure was. And had he gotten hurt and been in the hospital, well, if we don't have a healthcare representative document on file, it's going to be very difficult with all the goofy HIPAA rules that are out there for us to get any information at all. And then if we need to cash his checks or do things on his bank account or debit card or whatever it might be, it's certainly nice to have a power of attorney in place. So there's a lot there to think about and absorb, but that is lesson 101 on estate planning. And the last thing, when it comes to proper beneficiary planning, leave the money that's tax-free to your kids, your wife, your family, whatever. Leave those tax-ridden assets to charity. So I just had a conversation with one of the attendees to our class. Very, very, very giving. Gives about $10,000 a year to his church. He had around $650,000 in his IRA. So we talked through a methodical Roth conversion plan strategy. And I hope you're listening to the show, my friend, because we have a lot of new listeners, and when they attend a program like that, they typically immediately start to become listeners, and you'll know I'm talking about you. And that's always funny to me when someone says, hey, you brought this up. Was that about me? And I'm like, how did you know? Well, I'd bring up real stuff. So yeah, so we walked him through, and I said, my rule is about 5% of your annual distributions. That's what you want in your retirement account when you're 70 and a half, because that is your charitable giving account through a qualified charitable distribution. So even though we had 650, our target is to get him down to around 200,000 in his taxable IRA at age 70 and a half, and currently he's 63, so we have 7 years to get there, and then that becomes his charitable giving account. It's all from the IRA. And it works great. It works fantastic. And then I said, then at the end, give it to the church, give it to whoever you want. But that is the most taxable money out there. So you can avoid that and give all the tax-free money to your kids. That was fun. When we come back, let's talk about addressing the number one risk at all that I covered in the class last night. And that is the longevity risk, because that's when we start to tie in the long-term care and different things like that. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, we like to try to answer the question that you're going to ask us 10 years from now. I'm sitting here 52 years old. I'm not thinking a lot about long-term care, but I certainly, being in the position I'm in with one child and a boy, I certainly am thinking about it. Well, if I was 62, it would even be more on my mind. And if you've had parents or grandparents go through this, it's on your mind. No one wants to go out and buy insurance. It sucks, right? You go out and pay a bunch of money to something. You may or may not ever use it. And if you don't, you lose it. And that's insurance for you, right? We pay on our home, we pay on our cars, and many times we never have a claim at all. But when it comes to long-term care, part of the longevity risk that we all face, and longevity risk, as we talk about in the book, and my friend Tom Hegna mentioned on the show, it is a risk multiplier. The longer you live, a lot of things can go good, but a lot of things can go bad. And I talk about this in a podcast recently as well. And one of them is needing long-term care. So what we look at is, how do we take as many of these risks off the table? Of course, longevity risk being that great risk multiplier is the fact that inflation could destroy your purchasing power, big stock market crashes in the future, taxes decimating your retirement account, and yes, a long-term care need. Well, I know that addressing this is different for everybody. It typically affects the people right in the middle. You know, some people have tons of money, and they can pay for it themselves, no problems. They have home at-home care, no problem. They can do whatever they want kind of care, no problem. Then you have the people that are living on, you know, Social Security, maybe a little pension, and have very little assets outside of their own. Well, they are going to likely end up on Medicaid, which is the welfare system, and you are then a ward of the state. They'll tell you where to go and where you're going to get your care. Well, most of us don't want that. We want to be on a Medicaid avoidance plan. And that's the majority of people that we see and we work with. And that's kind of the blue-collar millionaire-ish guy, gal. So we take a look and say, okay, what are we at risk? Here's the income we have coming in. It's predictable. Here's the cost today to have someone come in your home. And here's what the cost is going to be in the future. And we estimate it, and we use a pretty aggressive inflation rate, as we should, right? Healthcare is one of the most escalated costs that we have. So we look at that and we say, okay, well, here's what we're probably up against. That, let's pick an age, 82, 85, well, I don't, whatever. Now, what resources do we have at that point, and how long will it be before we've used them all up? Well, most people, when we project it out within 3 to 7 years, they're completely broke. So we say, okay, well, why don't we figure out a solution to that? Well, there are a lot of different long-term care policies, including the Indiana Partnership Plan, but that's a Medicaid plan that says, hey, if I used this policy up, and now I can go on Medicaid and still keep all my money. Well, remember what Medicaid is. It's like, you go here, we have a bed there, right? You're in a shared room here. I don't want that. I want a Medicaid avoidance plan. Plus, it's long-term care insurance. The prices could go up over time. It's very difficult to get them to pay. I mean, talk to anyone that's went through that process. It's not easy. And they're always after you. How do they can quit paying? And you're always fighting it. It's a pain. Or you can buy something called asset-based care. You put a chunk of money in, 100 grand, it'll give you 300,000 of money to pay for care. But the caveat there is, you must have a licensed person, facility taking care of you. I like the traditional life insurance plan. This is what I have for myself. This is what I recommend to a majority of my clients, if you can qualify. It's life insurance, right? Guess what? Everyone's going to die. We have a one-in-one chance of that happening. If I die, money goes to Misty. Money goes to William. Money goes to whatever else organizations that we support. It's going to somebody. Oh, and by the way, if I need it while I'm alive and can't perform two of my six activities of daily living, or I have a cognitive impairment like dementia, I can go on claim. And up to 24% of the death benefit will be paid out tax-free for me to do whatever in the stinking heck I want with that money. It's mailbox money. You could say to your niece, hey, you know, why don't you come over here and take care of, you know, take care of mom, or take care of, you know, David or Missy or whatever, and we'll pay you. And she's not licensed, but she's certainly capable. So that's the benefit of that. Now, it's a little more difficult to get because you underwrite for life insurance. Not everyone's able to get life insurance. But it is a very usable tool and one that we lean on mostly. All right, I'm going to take another break because I have two more segments to cover and not a lot of time. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Yeah, I hope we have a bunch of new listeners. I think we will. We had 50 attend the class Monday night at Ivy Tech, and we had several online as well. And we have another program tonight, Thursday night, at the Legacy on South College. I think 30 or so are coming to that. And yeah, many of them are already listeners, thankfully, gratefully for that, but many are not. And some are like, oh, I didn't even know there was a radio show. Yeah, there is a radio show. It's only been going on for 20 years. So yeah, tune in and listen in. So we typically will pick up new listeners each and every time. And the cool thing about having it online and podcasts and all that, you can get some idea of how many people are listening. I don't know how many people are listening to it live on Thursday nights or on Saturday mornings. Of course, the radio station has some idea of the listenership based on Nielsen or something that they do. But you know, typically, you know, you hope to get thousands of people listening over time, and that's hopefully where we're at. But, you know, you never know. So if you are a new listener, welcome. I'm intending to do this for quite some time, as long as the key still works to the station. If they change the lock on me, I'll know I'll go back home and call it a day. All right. So I was talking about all the long-term care stuff. It's good stuff. Doug Hughes has a class coming up at Ivy Tech called Retirement Planning Today in March. I believe end of February, early March. Still room there. I think it's $49 to come. They spend a lot of time on issues like this, risk management. One area that I always find funny is if I'm there, sometimes we'll talk about this, property and casualty insurance. You know, a lot of people bought insurance years ago on their cars or house, and they've never really looked at it. And all of a sudden, you wake up one day, and you're my age, and you've got something to protect. You know, back when I was in my 20s, I didn't have anything to protect. I had a trailer, right, and a junky car. Now I have actually a pretty nice house and a nice car. And I'm like, okay, I need to protect things. And you go to your insurance agent, you're like, yeah, it's $50,000 per this and $100,000 per that. And you're like, well, that's not enough. I need $100,000 and $300,000. And then I need an umbrella policy, which is a few hundred bucks for $1 million, which is an all-encompassing umbrella policy. The other thing that people do is they never go back and check their deductibles, right? Insurance, in my opinion, is for the things you cannot cover yourself or you don't want to cover yourself. So when you look at your homeowner's insurance, what's funny is people have a zero deductible, $500,000. They rarely will turn those things in. Why? Because they're afraid their insurance will go up. So they never don't turn them in anyway. So could I afford a $2,500 mistake on my house? And would I turn that into the insurance company? No, I'd probably just pay it. Like I had a damage on my garage door with some storm not long ago. And I'm like, yeah, I could, you know, I'll just take care of it. I get the garage door people out and I don't know what it costs, $1,000. Well, I'm not turning that into my homeowner's insurance. So then why have a deductible that's $500? You're paying for that. So when I got with my insurance guy, I'm like, hey, let's raise the deductible. Let's look at $2,500. Let's look at $5,000. So, well, after we get to $5,000, that was as much as it made a difference in our premium. But we were actually able to knock about 20% off of our homeowner's insurance by simply going from a $1,000 deductible to $5,000. Well, here's the story, and this is the funny part. And true. I told this last night, and my wife backed it up. I'm on my phone with the Albertson Agency, my good friend John, who just is transitioning this agency to his son, Blake. Congratulations. And I'm like, hey, let's walk through this. So we did. I'm like, all right, move me to a $5,000 deductible. He says, okay, I'll get her done today. Not kidding. That evening, this was about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, a big storm was coming in. It was kind of coming from the northwest, which is odd. It usually comes kind of in a different direction, but I'm outside. I like to watch storms. I'm kind of like Glass. Glass likes to watch storms. So in you know, good hillbilly fashion, I go to the refrigerator, get a Miller Lite, and I walk outside, and I'm watching the storm come in. And now lightning starts to hit, and winds start to blow, and I thought I probably should head back in. But about that time, I heard this big crack and smash. I turned around and the big tree at the end of our driveway completely got knocked over and smashed our pillars, one brick pillar and the lights completely to the ground. So I'm staring at this and I just remembered the conversation I had with JD about 3 hours earlier about my homeowner's insurance. So I call him. Hey, John, did you get that deductible change today? And he said, oh yeah, I took care of it. And I said, well, let me tell you what just happened. I said, is there any way to turn it back? And he said, in a laughing way, sorry, no, I can't do that. Ah, crap. So the next day, of course, we hire people to come out. They cut the tree up. I estimate for masonry. The bill for everything was $4,980. Really? Are you kidding me? I was one day removed from making an insurance claim, the first one of my entire life, and actually coming out ahead. No, I've moved my deductible up. So my point is, just like in investing in everything else, great idea, bad timing. So when we say timing is everything, although you can't time things. That's the lesson of the day. We'll take a quick break, come back, wrap up this show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you missed any of it, of course, Saturday morning is a popular time at 9 a.m. Go to WGCLradio.com or over to iTunes, Google Play. Type in Your Money with David Hayes. Podcast will pop right up and subscribe. And then each and every week you'll get an alert and you can listen to what is going on and then catch the new podcast, 2025, The Final Drive, What You Need to Win. Most of those podcasts run anywhere from about 8 minutes to about 15 minutes. The opener was 20-some minutes because we really had to lay out what our purpose was of trying to get this story out. Like I told the people at Ivy Tech last night or Tuesday night, I want to tell this story 1,000 times to hundreds of thousands of people. That would be my goal over the next 4 years. I don't want to tell it, 1,000 times to 1,000 individuals. So my goal is to get out there in front of as many people as possible and spread the word about where we are today, where we're likely to go in the future from a tax perspective, and if you don't believe that's possible, take a look at our past, because if you don't know history, it's certainly deemed to repeat itself. The guys will be in next week to take the reins of the show. Doug Hughes, Wayne, Ryan, Josh, and probably Hot Rod will make a cameo, as always. And I found some interesting news this week. I've been trying to store up on my Wall Street Journal because I've been a little bit behind. And I found this funny because this was something, I don't have much time. Trading ban for Congress starts to gain traction. Are you kidding me? This was talked about 15, 20 years ago. The congressmen, senators have been insider traders for years. They get on the committees and they hear, okay, this is going to happen. There's contracts being issued. And guess what? They buy the stuff or have someone buy it. The Fed chairman is not allowed to own securities. Now, I'm not suggesting they shouldn't be allowed to own securities, but it has been a bent system forever. In fact, I know one of the law professors at IU testified in front of a congressional committee about this literally 20 years ago. Crazy, crazy, crazy. So you want to know how some of these people go in poor and come out rich? Well, I just gave you some of the story, and that is it. Oh, man. You can't make that stuff up, right? And then you have the SEC wanting to widen oversight of mutual funds and private equity firms. It's tough out there, folks, to be in a highly regulated industry. Just talk to my friends in medicine. Talk to any in banking. I mean, the regulators are just out knocking on your door constantly trying to make your life, you know what. All right, I'm going to take the long break. I'm going to hopefully come back with a little sunshine, a little vitamin, whatever they call it, that comes out of the sun. And then I'll be back in the hot seat the following week. So I hope everyone has a fantastic week. Stay stay warm, because I don't know what the weather's going to be. And after next Wednesday, I won't care, at least for DeHaze. That's about it. Have a great one, everyone. Goodbye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.